This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us online at www.njrevolutionradio.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, Instagram, and get us wherever you find your podcasts. Today, you have to excuse me, I have a little bit of a scratchy voice because I got sick right after Thanksgiving, and I'm still fighting a cold. But I've got two awesome women with me that I've had on before. Jennifer, you'll remember from the Women of Black Lives Matter panel. And Janaya, you'll remember from the Philly Socialist discussion that we had. I'll link both of those at previous interviews in the show notes. And I did not realize these two awesome women were related until after I had actually interviewed both of them separately. Maybe about a week later, I finally put the pieces together. I'm like, oh, you know, this badassery runs in families here. I have got to get these two women on to talk about this. So welcome to the show again.
Thank you.
So part of my goal, everyone probably that listens knows, is I want to try to get as many people involved in activism and show you that you have the power to change the world as possible. So that's part of why I wanted to bring on and talk about activism in families and how that really improves people's lives for the better. So I want to start with my first question for Jennifer. Did you raise Janaya in an activist family?
Not really, no.
Not really?
I was activated actually pretty late. I think that the idea of activism was always present, but that comes from my grandmother.
Your grandmother was an activist?
Yes, in her way, she was an activist. When I was young, she brought me a few times to Planned Parenthood to walk the women in past the protesters. She was always very diligent about taking care of the environment and any way that she found to take care of. Like, anytime you would hear on the news that, like, the plastic from... You remember this, Janaya? The plastic from the six packs was choking the animals. She would make sure that she would cut up the plastic and recycle it properly so that the animals weren't choking. And she would tell everyone she knew that you had to cut the plastic from the six pack of cans so that it didn't choke the animals, whatever animal it was. And you had to separate the tops from the water bottles.
Go ahead. You're getting cut off there, Janaya.
She was taking the recycling from other people's apartments, like cutting it in the recycling room.
She was also diligent about like separating batteries and taking them to a whole separate recycling place. And any way that there was to take care of the environment or to take care of other people that she could physically do, she was always doing that. And that was her own personal form of activist. I think she was a feminist in her mind, okay. Not necessarily in practice, but in her mind, she believed in the empowerment of other women, even if she did not do that for herself. So she did impress that upon us, or at least verbally, if not in practice.
You're right. She sounds pretty awesome, and she definitely seems like she had an impact on you.
Yes, she did have an impact on me in that way. And then, of course, seeing her live in a very different way, and not be able to have that power personally also had an impact on me. So she also had dinner on the table every night at 5 o'clock, serving spoons and real dishes. Dessert included most days because that is what my grandfather required for life. And even on the weekends, there was also breakfast and lunch on the table at specified times on real dishes placed out just so. Everyone was to wash their hands and come to the table at those times. And she cleaned the entire kitchen after every meal and kept the house and made sure everyone was taken care of at all times. And when I was young, she also worked and did all of those things. So So, yeah, she was a feminist only in her mind and was a housewife in real life.
Well, that was something else I did want to kind of touch on. It was like what's considered that ideal family is very stems out of a lot of white supremacy and a lot of patriarchy of keeping women from doing other things. Like your housework was your job. You don't have the ability to go out and fulfill yourself in other ways. And if you had any thoughts about that, maybe I'll start with Janaya since you haven't spoken that much so far.
I mean, like, just, I guess, like, just from, like, understanding what I've, like, I've seen, like, it's, it is, like, at least our family in that way was so surrounded, like, my grandfather was, like, the center of it. He was so, so steadfast in the idea that we had to have dinner all together and sit there and, like, have conversations. I remember arguing with him about, like, having a phone app because he wanted to engage with us. And like on some level, it's like very, I feel like it was important that we all engage, but it was like, you know, very patriarchal. Is that like?
Patriarchal?
Yeah, patriarchal centered. Like he was very much the head of our family in that way. And I don't know. I don't know how else to like elaborate on that. Do you have like a better idea about it, Mom?
Yeah, I think that there was a lot of resentment around that because we were all so centered around my grandmother because she was our center. She was our rock. Mm-hmm. So we understood that we were a matriarchal unit. But my grandfather was the center because she thought of him as the center.
Exactly. Okay. That's like a really good, that's like the best way to put it. Like,
right. We resented patriarchy from a very young age, not understanding the dynamic of it until we got older and had an analysis of patriarchy as a system. We knew what it was when we were little. We were just pissed off at him for the way he treated her because she was the head of everything. Even though he acted like he was the head of everything.
Exactly. Like she took care of all of us. Like
and him.
Yeah. And I don't know how she did it. Like honestly.
Right. Like what are you yelling about? You're just in the way. Shut up. And get out of the way. It made me so angry from when I was like really little. Like, why are you yelling at her? She does everything and you're just in the way.
Because she did. She taught us all how to be, essentially.
Yes. Yes.
And do like regular human stuff, like, and drove us all to work and school and practice, like, and you know, still took care of him. And like, I don't know how she didn't kill him, TBH. It's just
seriously, seriously, like, not even just be. She taught us how to be, and she taught us how to like love in the details. She taught us all of the details of life.
Yeah, like, and I don't think I would be
about it all the time.
As deeply as she, like, I don't know. I think being around her and with her taught me how to be an empathetic person.
Yes.
I don't think I would care so much about the way that other people are on a daily basis, like, if it weren't for her. Because I, like, and I know that I take care of everyone that I see because of her.
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely awesome. It sounds like she was a pretty amazing lady.
Yes.
Is she still around or has she passed on?
She's still here. She's fading.
Yeah. She has the dementia.
My grandmother had that as well. It's rough. I understand.
And you know what's crazy is that she has dementia. And all that is left is the details. And that's literally all there is. So as much as like the larger parts are gone, when she goes to the grocery store, she still makes sure that she buys everyone's favorite cookies.
Oh, it's just all that's left is love, basically.
All that's left is love. So like everything else is gone. But when you go to her house, you know that your favorite snacks will be there.
Aww. Very true.
So if you weren't actually bringing up Janaya as an activist, when did you get activated, or more activated at least, Jennifer?
I was activated in a political campaign in 2013. It actually started, it was a really slow activation. So I went through a lot of trauma, and I think it was a very slow activation from a series of extraordinarily unfortunate events.
Wow. Okay.
In retrospect. So I went through a lot of, several abusive relationships, mm-hmm. That had me look at trauma in a certain way, that had me look at women's relation to police in the Black community in a certain way, that had me look at the Black community in general, trauma in the Black community in a certain way. I went through homelessness that had me look at poverty and women's poverty in relation to men in prison in a certain way. I went through a period of addiction. I went through a lot of different things, and I volunteered in a period of homelessness for a political campaign. I was supposed to volunteer for an hour, but I ended up volunteering like 10 hours a day, every day for months. I was kind of fascinated with the process and the lack of organization of it all. And I realized in the midst of it that I had a set of skills that I had not tapped into, and I used them. And in watching the process, I found a lot of things that were missing in me, and found that I had some personal power that I had not tapped into. And I found that Black women's voices specifically were missing, even though, especially in the Democratic Party, they are kind of what's holding up the party. Mm-hmm. Right. So like, why?
Right. Everyone loves to thank Black women. Your vote saves the day, but then shut up again as soon as
right.
you're done with that.
Right. So like, why are they thanking us after the fact, but not running us during? And there was some voter suppression in that particular campaign in the small city that I was in, Asbury Park. There was some voter suppression issues. The police were called. There was like this, it was a really super messy campaign. So many people ran for 5 seats, and it was fascinating and horrible. And at the end of it, I was like, okay, I don't know what that was. And I opted out for a while and then came out of it activated. And I just started reading a tremendous amount and moving, and people saw that I was organized and started calling me for things, which honestly surprised me. And I was shocked. I think Janaea will remember that. I was like, oh my God, people are calling me for all these things.
And well, that's exactly where I wanted to go next, was asking Janaea about.
My children were not surprised that people were calling me for things. I was shocked. They were like, no, I'm not surprised at all, because you are smart. I was like, really? You think so? I did not know that.
So what was it like seeing your mom finally get a little bit of recognition and find her voice and her inner badass that you probably knew was there all along?
I mean, it's interesting to watch people, like, I don't know. I always describe it as, like, it's interesting to watch people have, like, a light bulb moment. Mm-hmm. To realize what they wanted to do for so long and like figure it out, if that makes sense. Like, it's like, wow, like, okay, like I am very capable, I have this ability and I can do this, like. And I can't speak for my siblings, but that's definitely what I thought. And, you know,
how old were you in 2013 when this was all going on?
I was 18.
18? Okay. And what kind of an impact did it have? Were you, did that make you want to, I mean, assuming you always respected your mother because your mother's an awesome lady, but did that make you be like, I'm going to be like her more? Or
I think in 2013, I was going through a lot of personal stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I've always battled anxiety, and pretty severe depression. So as awful as it sounds, I think I was very much in my own head in 2013. I don't know if you can attest to that.
Me too. I think we both were. We were all very separated. We have a lot of family trauma also that kept us divided. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think, you know, I was just trying to figure out how I wasn't, like, personally, I was just trying to figure out what I was going to do next, you know. And going to a high school in a town that kind of just encourages everybody to go to community college and, like, figuring out, like, you know, like, how to get to a four-year university and, like, do the things that I wanted to do and the role that I thought I should do, I think that was, like, the forefront of my mind in 2013, I'm not going to lie.
Makes sense. I mean, you know, I think a lot of activists come out of a place of depression. I readily admit also that I come out of a place of anxiety and depression. And, you know, that's why I'm a medical marijuana patient now. And, you know, it's just really something I think that inner pain helps you see the pain around you a lot more. So yeah. I definitely think that's something in that a lot of activists share. Another question that I did want to get to of, you know, and this is actually another great tie-in. I love when my guests do that for me. It makes me not have to do much work at all. Was what did you do to empower her as she was growing up to make her turn into the badass that she is today?
Unfortunately, I can't say very much, honestly. I think that because one of the reasons, because I had my children very young. So I had my oldest when I was 16. I had Janaea when I was 18, and I had Heather when I was 21. They are both out of relatively abusive relationships. Obviously not working relationships, because you don't pick working relationships when you're that age. Mm-hmm. My mother did a tremendous amount of supplemental parenting. And there is a lot of dysfunction. We have a lot of family dysfunction. So I didn't do a lot of supportive parenting, as they were coming up. I would say the most supportive I have been is recently, right? So while she's been doing what, like after she chose to be an activist and she knew that I was already doing activist work, she knows that she can call me and say, hey, I'm doing a thing. And what is this thing that I'm doing and how do I do it? And I'm like, I don't know, but I know this person that knows. So we kind of support each other that way. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's kind of like mom support more than anything.
Right.
Else. Of course you can do the thing. Obviously you can do the thing. You can do all the things because you're badass. And of course you can do the thing. Obviously you can do the thing. You can do all things. but yeah, it's definitely been more now. That anxiety depression thing that she was talking about earlier, she definitely, I handed down. Unfortunately, that's definitely hereditary. I got it from my mom and she got it from hers. And that definitely had a huge impact on my parenting and the way I was parented. So a lot of that is in our family dynamic. So I wouldn't say, I think that most of the support that any of us got was intellectual support, if anything. Like, we've just had a tremendous amount of conversation that drove us in the direction that we went. And we're not the only activists in our family, just to say. Okay. I have a younger daughter who is a trans activist and an older son who is also an activist. And that comes from these sort of bizarre conversations that apparently other families don't have, which I was not aware of. I thought all families did this.
I wouldn't undercut yourself and not say that you weren't supportive in like the one general idea that there was nothing I couldn't figure out, if that makes sense. I always knew, like, I always had this, like, very much, like, a mentality, like, okay, we can figure this out. Doesn't really, I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to figure it out.
Right, I don't know, but definitely. Yeah, I can say that that's real. We definitely, and I've always felt the same way. I think that my mom always gave me that as well, that's something, my mom, that's what we call my mom.
Okay.
My mom also gave me that. Like, I don't know, but I know that we're smart enough to.
Yeah, just give me like a few minutes. Just, right. I got it. I don't know how, but I have it.
Absolutely.
I love that. That's so great. That little bit of like, I've got this.
Yeah.
I don't know how, but I'm going to figure this out.
Just give me like 5 minutes. I don't really know what I'm doing, but I'm going to Google it. I have like a, I'm going to call someone and then I'll be back.
And then, you know, you'll solve the problem in the end.
Yeah.
Pretty much what organizers do, right?
Yeah.
At least that I love that in organizer circles and with other organizers, you're with a bunch of people that have absolutely no idea. Like, at no point have I ever been with a group of organizers that there are people that are acting like they have everything under control. There are a bunch of people that are like, what? How are you? I don't know, but we'll figure it out. Don't worry about it. We got it. It'll be fine.
And I think that's definitely my one takeaway from your early parenting, though. Like, I think that's probably the biggest ideal that's carried me through my like personal organizing life. Like, you know, to like look like I know exactly what's going on.
Did I look like I know? I'm gonna cry. I never knew that.
Well, I mean, like, you know, like if I asked you something, always you were like, you were like really honest about not knowing.
Yes, that's
me. I don't know. I will be back though.
We'll figure it out shortly.
I don't think a lot of people have that level of self-awareness that they'll admit, I don't know, but I will. Like, that's hard for a lot of people to say, especially a parent to a kid, you know, that parents want to pretend they know everything. So I think that's an awesome, like, really people evolve.
I think that by the time I had Janaea, I was acutely aware that I was a child with children, right? Like, when I had Jason, I was like, I'm doing this and I don't need anybody and I got this and nobody's going to tell me what to do and I'm grown and I got this. And then I had Janaea and I was like, I am like a little kid with kids and they need stuff and I have no idea what I'm doing. And Jason was starting to ask me questions and I was like, bro, I don't know what you're even talking about right now. I have no idea. And like when they started to like become tiny humans, they were asking the craziest questions. I was like, I don't know, I haven't even thought about that. And they had the internet, so they were asking like seriously crazy questions and I was like, where did you even get that? I don't know what you're talking about right now. And they were like wildly smart and blowing my mind and I was like 24. I was like, bro, I have no idea. And I'm not even going to lie to you because I hated when my mom lied to me. I hated it. It made me super mad.
But I also think that the other really important like takeaway, I guess, is how honest I like have to be with myself and other people about my mental illness. I think like when I went to college, so many people like hid the fact that they had anxiety or problems with depression, or like, you know, it gives off this perception that where I went to school, like nobody was mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like this like ridiculous person because I was like, well, no, like I know that I have depression and I know I have this problem. Like, I don't understand why other people aren't talking about it. And I think that's also probably like the big takeaway I have was like to be like, you know, you have to be honest about where you're coming to the table with, or else like nobody in this room is going to be successful.
Yeah, that's real.
And I don't, I'm like, I think that like my mom is probably the first person I've ever heard have conversations with other people, like other folks about her mental illness, like being honest about it and like not being like upset or like afraid, like, you know, like I have depression. That's just what it is, like that's what's happening. Like, I am upset today, but we still have to get things done. I didn't know that other folks didn't do that.
Yeah, and I think you are making a big impact with that honesty, that it still is very stigmatized in this country. So everyone that can hear, I'm not alone. You know, like, I want to thank you guys for doing that, very much so. And do you think it's your activism that really enables you to be able to, like, have those kinds of conversations? Or would you have always been able to have those kinds of conversations?
I mean, for me personally, doing this kind of work has made me a lot more comfortable having conversations. I think before I, like, started, like, well, I guess this all kind of started for me at Monmouth when I started a pod with my friend Jamila called Students Advocating Girls Education. And people kind of started to see it as more of students advocating for gender equality. We were like, you know, we were like whatever you need us to be. Like, that's kind of how I describe it. I think that definitely, like, being in that situation definitely gave me more confidence to talk about my, like, personal issues. And then when people started coming to us about how to figure out, like, much bigger, I guess, institutional issues, it became like I don't have a choice. Like, I want to figure this out. I want to make this better. And I can't do it if I'm not going to be honest about what happened to me and why we need to have conversations about, you know, mental illness at the university and, like, you know, assault at the university. Like, we need to, I'm going to be honest about my life so people feel inclined to be honest about theirs, because that's the only way that this is going to get different.
Are you super proud of your daughter, Jen?
Yeah. I can't even stand it.
So I guess that's the last question I wanted to ask was, you know, there's plenty of women right now with young children out there who are, you know, reading their younger daughters a copy of A is for Activist and trying to raise their kids to be activists. So what piece of advice would you give to moms that are raising activists right now?
Oh my God, so many different things that are so important. I mean, one of the most important things is honesty, right? Like, mm-hmm. I talk to people so often that are, I was talking to somebody this morning, and you want to teach them everything, but it's impossible, right? Like, you can't sit them down and teach them everything. That's not a thing. And you want to protect them from everything at the same time, but they can't know things and be protected from the things. A lot of the things are super horrible and they have to know. And honestly, they want to know the things. So I guess honesty, one of the, I guess, unfortunate/fortunate things about being a super young mom and not knowing enough to lie to my children about the things. Like, I didn't know what to hide and not hide from them. So if I was older, I would have not told them the truth about their body parts, because I would have known that when we went to ShopRite, Janaea would be telling everyone that she had a vagina, right? It would have occurred to me that would happen, and then I would have lied to her. But she should know the real names for her body parts. So that was a good thing to do, right? So, like, proper education, give them the real names for things, and then maybe talk about the appropriateness of where to use the words, because I skipped that part. But just, like, don't lie to your kids. Tell them the truth. Give them, let them see the news and help them process it rather than hiding them from the horrible things in the world, because they need to know all of the good and all of the bad things. Because if they don't know the bad things, they won't be able to fight them either.
I want to thank both of you so much for sharing with my audience today. It's been really touching and moving, and I think people are going to get a lot out of this. Do either one of you have any closing thoughts you'd like to add before we close it out for today?
I think that just to throw this in there, and I don't know if you, like, want to include it or not, I think that if I wasn't that honest, college would have been so much more difficult than it was. Because I feel like I was, like, walking into situations and I was like, wow, this is extremely bad. I don't want to be here. And people were like, no, but, like, this is, like, I think I was at a party and I was like, I don't want to stay here. I'm going to call my mom. She lives down the street. I'm going to leave. because you guys are all making me uncomfortable, having personal space issues, boundary issues. Everybody is. So I think being so forward in like at least raised so forwardly definitely impacted my life and the way that I address other folks and like speak to them and like talk to them and like handle situations, even if I decided to not do this work at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think that's a good takeaway. Yeah.
Activism is personal first, right? So if you're not taking care of yourself in that way, right? If you're not telling your truth first, then you can't do anything for the world outside. You have to do for yourself first. So self-care is the first activism.
That's so true.
Yes, you have to tell your truth first. So talking about my mental illness probably was my first real activism. Just being honest about my mental illness. I am not doing well today. Like, stop lying about my depression. That was probably my first real activism.
Yeah, I think, and I totally agree with that. Advocating for yourself is the first, first activist move. I mean, like, saying, like, I am doing extremely bad today, please do not talk to me, like, is the first, I think, the first thing that I ever did as an activist. Like, being at Monmouth and saying, like, I can't go to class because I'm not doing okay. Like, I can't. Mm-hmm. I can't focus. I can't sit here and not cry. I can't, like, be a regular functioning person. Like, I'm gonna have a panic attack. Or I need to sit under the table because I need to be small. Like, I think being honest about all those things about myself was the first like activist thing I did.
Oh yeah. You know what? There's one thing that I wanted to, that I actually thought of that I wanted to say specifically. So there's a viral video of a little girl that is crying and her mother's talking to her and telling her to stop crying. You both probably saw it because I think I posted it on my Facebook. I may not have, because it made me super angry. And the mother's telling her, you have to stop crying. You have to stop crying now. And she's crying, like pretty hysterical, sobbing. And the mother's like, you have to stop crying. And she's like, okay, I'm not crying. I'm not crying. I'm laughing. And she's still sobbing. You saw it, Heather?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she says, I think I have to go to bed now. And they sort of pose it as like this really funny video, mm-hmm. right? That video actually broke my heart, right? People think it's really funny. I think the caption to the video is like me trying to get through the day or something. Mm-hmm. And you could think of it as funny because people do go through like a lot of emotions during the day and you kind of try to fake it. What I saw in that video is someone gaslighting a little kid and teaching them how to pretend to feel other than you actually feel and allow someone to tell you how to behave when you feel bad instead of allowing you to feel how you feel and setting you up for a lifetime of abusive relationships. That's what I saw in that video. And it absolutely broke my heart. And it looks cute, right? Because it was mm-hmm. a cute little girl and she was going through the things and it was adorable. She was absolutely adorable. That kind of gaslighting is something that happens all the time, right? It happened to me when I was little. You don't think that it's a bad thing because you just want your kid to stop crying because maybe you're going to go crazy. I know that I did it when my kids were little. Like, you have to stop right now. Please don't do that to your children. Like, we need to allow people to feel what they feel. We need to allow them to go through their feelings and like, don't gaslight your kids because it literally sets you up for a lifetime of emotional and potentially physical violence. That right there. I'm so mad about that video and it's super viral right now.
Yeah, I'm going to link that into the show notes too so everybody else can see it. And that is an amazing take on that, that, you know, you don't even think of these little actions. People are like, you know, encouraging it like, oh, it's so cute, you know, but that it really is. Everything you said is 100% spot on.
Yeah, I think that's extremely true. And it's also something you think about, like when you do it, like telling a kid to not cry.
Right. And like, even if it doesn't seem like an appropriate reason to cry, like you feel how you feel, go through what you need to go through. But
your emotions are valid.
Right.
And someone else doesn't have the right to tell you can't feel it.
I think that's what I like hear often now in my adult life. Like, you know, I always tell people your emotions are extremely valid. You're an adult with agency and you need to go feel what you feel. Absolutely. And if you want to come back and restart this conversation once you've worked through all those emotions, I would be happy to do that with you.
Right. Just please take deep breaths. So that's what I always say. Take deep breaths so you don't hyperventilate.
Yeah. Well, and like I think I often also think about this as an arbiter and Philly socialist. Like I'm Philly social, well, like not Philly socialist, but PTU, like the Philadelphia Tenants Union has an arbiter for like as a conflict resolution mechanism. So when people like get anxious, I'm always like, okay, you're an adult with agency and you have a lot of feelings that are extremely valid. I want to help you either work through them, we can work through them together, or you can work through them alone. But I want us to restart this conversation once you've worked through every one of those emotions that are necessary for you to process the situation.
Right. De-escalate instead of invalidate. Like, there's a difference between de-escalation and invalidating. Your feelings are absolutely valid, and I need you to do whatever you need to do to get through them. But invalidating someone's feelings is gaslighting, and it is dangerous precedent to set with little kids.
Right. Gaslighting tries to make you feel like you're going crazy. That's the goal of gaslighting.
It is.
Yeah.
And when I saw that video of that little girl, I was like, that's how I decided that abuse was normal. That's what normalized abuse in my brain. Mm-hmm. And that's not okay. That's not okay. And that's what I took on as personal activism. Like, I can't do anything necessarily with that outwardly, but in my personal activism, that's a new thing. I don't care how you feel about what I feel. It's happening. It's happening right now.
This interview did not even a little bit go the way I intended it when I started this. So much a better place than I intended.
Well, that's really good. I'm glad that it's better than what you
No, it really, like, I was, you know, I was almost going to be a fluff piece about activists are great, look at this awesome activist family, but you guys made it 100% more real and valuable than it would have otherwise been. I thank you guys so much for being here. To my listeners, thank you so much for joining us and going on this journey with us today. And, you know, we need your help here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. We do not take any corporate money. You're never going to hear this story on the corporate media, something like this. A 45-minute discussion with two badass women telling you real shit. You're not going to hear that on corporate media ever. So that's why we need your help. If you can, donate to us. Go to that website, www.njrevolutionradio.com. Donate, even if it's $1 a month, that helps us out. You know, we can keep things pretty cheap here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. We're activists. We know how to do things on as low of a budget as we can, but we do need a little bit of help. So thank you guys so much. The future's yours to create. Go out there and create it.